Hello and welcome to Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I'm Clayton Ashley.
And I'm Maddie Lipchansky.
This week we're on to episode 4 of season 1 of Enterprise, episode Strange New World. And we're going to talk about the week of October 4th to about October 10th, 2001. Is there anything you're thinking right off the top?
No, I think it's very funny that they titled an episode Strange New World this
exactly
right at the top.
And I'll say this, I think it kind of should have been the second or the first episode after the premiere, but anyway.
Oh, for sure.
The top of the Wikipedia, and also I'm sure Memory Alpha, has to disambiguation, not to be confused with the much better TV show that came later.
Yeah, please do not confuse us with the good show.
But in the world of entertainment, I think I want to get started here with movies, because I want to just bring up that I think the first time I relied on Box Office Mojo, I'm not sure if that's also what you relied on.
Oh, yeah.
But because I noticed something when I was just kind of also Googling around to get an idea of some things, and that was that we had missed Training Day, which apparently ended up being the biggest movie of October.
Oh.
Or at least I was missing it when I was looking on Box Office Mojo. I don't know if they always have the Mojo, or if something about the way they track daily versus weekly or theaters opening. But this time I'm just saying I used thenumbers.com.
Okay.
And yeah, their top movie, Training Day, with Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke. Has Denzel Washington ever made a bad movie?
You know, not one that I've seen.
Yeah.
He's a very consistent man, Denzel Washington. Well, he's very good in everything, so it's hard to... It becomes possibly a chicken and the egg situation. No, I've actually never seen Training Day.
Yeah, I hadn't either, but I was like, I'll bet it's good, because I can't think of one he's in that's bad.
Yeah. I mean, people seem to like that film a lot. That's Fuqua? Is that a Fuqua?
Yeah. Is that the director?
Yeah, he's the director.
He also
did all the Equalizer movies with Denzel, is what I know him from.
Okay. A fan.
And also
Denzel.
The movies, the Olympus Has Fallen movie, which is quite bad, but.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember which White House being attacked movie I saw.
You saw, there's White House Down with Channing Tatum, and there's Olympus Has Fallen with Gerard Butler.
But I should have seen that one with Denzel Washington in it.
I don't know if Denzel's in it.
The director. I was like, wait a minute. I just contradicted myself. He can't be in a bad movie.
That's
it's
true.
It's impossible.
Yeah. And that one, I believe, Aaron Eckhart is the president. And Morgan Freeman also in that movie. Yeah, no Denzel.
But Training Day was, as most of the top was stuff we've already talked about.
Yeah.
You got our Jurassic Parks and American Pies. But we have Bandits with Bruce Willis and Billy Bob Thornton.
Is that a real movie that exists?
So it's the trailer does a great job of selling it. I definitely want to watch it now. It's about bank robbers, Billy Bob Thornton and Bruce Willis. They're bank robbers. They do a good job. And then I think based on the trailer, they accidentally kidnap Kate Blanchett, and then it's a romantic triangle as well as a comedy heist movie.
Gotcha.
Really well reviewed at the time.
Bruce Willis has a ponytail, which is, I think, super mega important to note, at least on my end.
I think he got so typecast as the hard-ass action guy that this is from his era when he was still doing things that were a lot sillier.
Yeah. This is like right after he had done the whole Nine Yards the year previous. Another very goofy sort of like crime comedy. This is a crime movie with a PT Cruiser in it, so you know it's really good.
Really dating it. Wow.
Yeah, a getaway car that. PT Cruiser.
That would be like an excellent joke for a movie now trying to really place itself in this era.
Yeah.
So I love seeing it back then. They even thought it was a silly car. And it was. For a silly time. The other one stood out to me, Corky Romano.
Is that the one where Chris Kattan plays a mobster's son?
Yes.
Tremendous.
I just want to read this by James Bertinelli. Rated the film a half star out of four. It only takes about 3 minutes of running time to realize that you have wasted your money. The question is whether you have the stamina to endure all 8 minutes. I survived Corky t-shirts should be given out to everyone who stays until the end credits roll and could provide proof that they didn't take the easy way out of napping.
Wow.
Brutal.
Yeah, I feel like Chris Kattan, a guy that totally was at the absolute, like a really good sort of synecdoche kind of figure for like what was, if we talk about like the sort of like sickness of the American brain in the early 2000s,
mm-hmm.
like the guy everybody loved for comedy, like could not get enough of until, of course, the movies came out. Chris Kattan was like a huge, they were like, this is our guy. He was so huge on SNL.
That's right.
And then they were like, yeah, we're going to put you in. We're going to give you like standalone movies. And we're also going to put you in. He's got a great performance in the film Monkey Bone later. But like, I don't know. Like, I feel like everyone just, I guess, is this late? This is, I guess, late in Chris Kattan's career at this point. How deep into the sort of Kattan?
Yeah, Kattaniverse, are we?
Yeah, like when was he on SNL?
Yeah, another movie in the string of filled SNL cast member movies.
Mm-hmm.
So that, in a way, wasn't surprising.
Hey, do you know he has a memoir called Baby Don't Hurt Me?
Oh, boy. Okay. This is actually early in his career, as far as movies go.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like, oh, this is the same year as Monkey Bone. Beautiful.
Yeah, same year.
He's definitely
sixth
on
movie.
SNL still at this point, right?
Let's see. What does it say?
Yeah, 96 to 2003 is on SNL.
Holy crap, yeah.
So this is like America has mango fever. and if you are a younger person listening to this, and you don't remember mango, I do want you to go Google Chris Kattan Mango and watch some clips. Because it is a sort of like, how would you describe Mango? He's like, he played like a male stripper, and the gag was that every male host of SNL would fall in love with him.
So this, I was dissociating a little bit for the sec there because I definitely didn't see this, and I had to connect the dots with context clues there, but it was really hard.
Oh yeah, and his catch line was, "You cannot have the mango," because his name was Mango.
Okay, it's making more sense now.
And it was like, and the joke was that Chris Kattan is like not traditionally very attractive or whatever, and he was dancing around very stupidly in like little underwear. And then the joke, of course, is that these men, ostensibly straight, would fall in love with the mango.
Mm-hmm.
His other big sort of gag on SNL was a monkey named Mr. Peepers. And he would play a monkey.
He would play the monkey.
He would play like a monkey man named Mr. Peepers, and most of it was like him spitting food all over everybody. It was, again, the thing, I think my central, one of my big theses here is that America was very sick at the time. Not like now and everything's great, but like American culture was diseased. And this is the sort of stuff that was like mega popular and your parents were like going to work, talking to their coworkers about what Mr. Peepers did on Saturday Night Live.
It's making so much more sense to me now seeing the trailer to this and kind of like, how did this get made? Knowing what his shtick was, it makes more sense because he's a very awkward son of a mobster who is like a veterinarian. And it feels like there's a lot of gay bashing kind of humor, but also just generally like he's so awkward and weird. And that's the whole thing. And a lot of gross out humor in the trailer.
He's very small and he's willing to sacrifice his body for the bit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like kind of like effeminate, I guess, on some level. Or that he is like not traditionally very masculine. He's like a tiny guy.
Yeah, and especially compared to all the mafia
And he talks
masculinity
his,
it's doing. It's a humorous take on the mafia.
That's right. Great stuff.
One thing I would be remiss if I forgot about Corky Romano was that according to Wikipedia, Robert Pattinson's one of his favorite movies.
That's bad audio, but I was just sort of staring at the screen.
Right. Yeah,
you were. That's a crazy. I'm letting that sink in. He's Robert Pattinson is so fucking... I love him. He's so fucking strange. Like, I love how weird... Like, you could not predict from watching, like, the Twilight films just how weird him and Kristen Stewart ended up being.
I know.
It's Which I think is really beautiful on both their behalves.
Yeah, lightning in a bottle with it, just who they happen to capture for
two
that team
absolute
movie.
Freakazoids.
But yeah. Yes, if you're thinking about that horrible era of culture...
Yeah.
And a young Robert Pattinson seeing that broke his brain in a certain way that I think it probably was not helpful to most people. Something about it helped him out and he, you know, it unlocked something.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Pattinson's about my age. So like, yeah, he was right there in the theater seeing Corky Romano with all his friends.
There's something here. There's a real diamond in the rough.
I have to get on the big screen. I have to make my Corky Romano.
And so that was number three. Bandits at 2, Training Day at number 1. The thing I wanted to get to was Iron Monkey, which actually sounds sick. It was a 1993 Hong Kong martial arts film from the same director of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Oh.
Brought to the theaters by Miramax with Quentin Tarantino's help.
That's cool. It's Donnie Yen, who's very good.
Iron Monkey, cool martial arts. Also, we had Joyride at number 8, which is just another one of this in this very sub genre of trucker horror movies. It's got Steve Zahn and Paul Walker in it.
Okay, wait, that sounds good.
Yeah, it does, and the trailer looks good too. And then I also just throw in here that we also got at the very bottom Max Keeble's Big Move, which is a kids movie that's all pretty much kids, and it's directly for kids. And I just to point out that like. This top 10, once again, the genre spectrum, just not something you see, sadly.
No.
Martial arts, true kids movie that's not animated, action movie about a trucker, Zoolander's in there, you got a romance with Serendipity, you got another romantic thriller, I think, with Don't Say a Word. It's just, you know, and that's not even the top three movies. You just got a cornucopia to choose from.
Max Kibble's Big Move... features cameos from Tony Hawk and Lil Romeo.
it's about a kid who like has to move to a new school. I don't know. They could, again, Walt Disney could make that for probably like $1.5 million.
Yeah.
And, you know, it quadruples its money easily every day.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, that's the box office for this, the week of, so this is the week ending in October 12th, which is why I said that technically I'm capturing a little bit that premiered. But yeah, those premieres were so interesting to me. Bandits, Corky Romano, and Iron Monkey, all brand new this Friday.
Because I think at this point in the American cinema, mm-hmm. I think a lot of places sort of cleared the decks for a little while to get away. So hoping people would get back into the theater for like holiday time.
Yeah, did they do? I mean, I'm immediately thinking of the last disaster that affected movie releases with COVID. Like, were releases, how many of them, but beyond maybe an accidental terrorist connection, had to be delayed just because, like, oh no, we want to wait till people are actually in theaters again.
Yeah, like we want people to actually see this movie, or it's like we want some, you know, money back on our return on our money. Rather, yeah.
But yeah, okay. So music, looking at the Billboard 100 for this week, we still have Going Strong, Alicia Keys, Fallen still on top.
People love that song.
They're still falling for Fallen.
They're still falling like so many people out of a skyscraper on that beautiful Blue Tuesday. That changed America forever,
but not their taste in this particular song.
No, that's, I think it reminded them of it pleasantly.
Then, and I also, because it had been on here so long, I kept assuming I must recognize it. I listened to it. I don't recognize this one. But what I did recognize was number 2, Jennifer Lopez's I'm Real.
Oh, great song. I got nothing to say about that song.
Yeah, it's just...
Listen, I, as a person of Bronx extraction, I'm very pro J-Lo in general. I think she's like our last... She's like still so nuts. Did you watch her recent movie? This Is Me, ..
Yes,
now?
The astrology gods one.
I only bring it up because it is like a real 2000-2001 ass product.
That's
like, it's like all music videos that seem like they are from this era specifically.
Yeah.
Like, and which I just thought was like so, it was so strange to watch.
The kind of thing that back then a studio may have been like, yeah, whatever, we'll put a little money into that. It's got a star like J-Lo. But yeah. Today could only be made because she was just, for some reason, driven to make this thing.
Yes. Yes.
And that's how something like this could happen. And it is a trip.
I had to put all my cultural and monetary capital into making this thing where I am a worker at the Heart Factory. I believe is the
that
framing
is just
device.
One of the many astounding framing devices the movie uses.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's worth tracking down.
Yeah, that was really wonderful. Also, JLo fact, last week, 2 weeks ago, I went to go see the current production of Cats : The Jellicle Ball here in New York City.
Oh, I forget things.
It was Clayton, it was incredible. They fixed Cats. They fixed Cats by removing the cat costumes.
Oh.
And then making cat, in quotes, code word for like gay slur. And
wow.
It works. And they, you know, they said it in like the Harlem ballroom scene. It's great. Anyways, J-Lo was sitting directly in front of me.
What?
It's a very small theater. J-Lo was directly in front of me and she was having a blast. And it made me so happy.
I'm so happy for you. I'm so
she was standing up and
so
clapping and
you.
Dancing around. It was great. It was incredible.
Jagged Edge featuring Nelly.
Mm.
Where the party at is number 3. Don't have anything much to say about that.
No.
Mary J. Blige, though. Family Affair.
J. Blige, sorry. Mary J. Blige is the name of her boat captain.
Whoops.
Uncle.
Please say it again.
Mary J. Blige.
Mary J. Blige. Did I just type it in wrong? I hope.
You might have gotten auto-corrected because bilge is a word.
It is. That's probably... Okay, I'll
bilge
put it
is
on
like
that.
The wastewater
God, wow.
on a boat motor.
But Family Feud. And I definitely recognize this is just an earworm that... I just never knew what it was called. And, you know, here I am. Don't know the artist, definitely. Yeah, it's...
It's fine. Yeah. Was that
stuff.
Like her comeback... time yeah
I wouldn't know because I don't know this artist obviously
I believe so that was like her big yeah 2000 was 2001 this is off No More Drama which is her like big comic she was big in like the very late 80s early 90s
okay
and then she was like in the wilderness for a bit and this is like I recall her big comeback and
oh,
it was
cool.
all about
good for her
it was No More Drama
she hates
drama she
okay.
hates it and she doesn't want to encounter it.
Mm-hmm. I'm honestly for same.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. A very turbulent time to be releasing your album called No More Drama, but
fair enough.
Yeah.
Just keeping up Stained, still at 6. Still still there.
A band you know and have heard of.
I have heard. Well, yes, I double checked that one already. Gwen Stefani, I just wanted to say Let Me Blow Your Mind at 8.
Ooh. What was Let Me Blow Your Mind? I don't remember that one.
This, I mean, another one of these things where it's just like, do I recognize that? Do I? And then I listen to it. It's like, oh, yeah,
oh,
definitely.
That is the Eve track with Gwen Stefani on it. Okay.
Oh,
I remember the music video for this, but this is like before Gwen went solo and then she was like starting to break out. A very insane thing. I was like, I do remember the music video really distinctly. And I was looking at something about it. And in it, they go, it's Gwen Stefani and Eve, like, go crash, like, a very fancy party.
Mm-hmm.
And at the party is a Leona Helmsley lookalike and actor Udo Kier.
Huh. Yeah, I can see why you'll never...
Why would you forget this party? Why would you forget this music video that has Eve, Gwen Stefani, and Udo Kier? Just a beautiful matchup there.
So that's our check-in, the box office. But then TV, still got Friends in ER dominating up there at the top. But let me see if I can... Now, here, the third season, we have the return because it's what America really needed in this dark these dark times. West Wing season 3.
Oh God! Is that what this is?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you'd recognize the theme, but
no, I thought it was like some Little House on the Prairie shit. That's what that sounds like. Oh, are you a West Wing guy?
Now, I will say, fully renounced, but yes.
Okay, because if
I
you were still into it, this is going to break up the podcast.
I know, and what probably our friendship.
Like, honestly,
I have
friends that like the West Wing, one or two, and we've just decided to not talk about it.
No, so it's the thing where it hit at that time when, like, I was in college, end of high school, I think, and going into college. Obama mania.
Sure.
Hope was a thing in politics again. And also, it had been recommended because of, what's his face, the writer.
Aaron Sorkin.
Good old Sorkin.
I call him Aaron Stinkin because he sucks.
Yeah.
I hate him.
And I was thinking about it actually, and this was a show I watched on Netflix slowly over the course of rental DVDs.
Yeah, oh wow.
And I even remember, like, at one point finishing up like a season, and I was in like the hospital, and it was like comfort.
Sure.
Because that's the thing, what the show is. It's a fantasy that was fed to people, and I'm not alone in this, but it was fed to people who then gained political power.
Yes.
And it was toxic.
Yes. I will never ever forget. I can't even remember where I read it, but it's stuck in my brain forever, like a piece of glass in my foot. But like, there's something on the show where, like, President what's his face
Bartlett
President
Jed,
Bartlett.
Jed Bartlett.
President Jed Bartlett gets a second term,
mm-hmm.
and all of his aides and staffers resign, like, symbolically, so he can rehire them. And this is, like, presented as, this is a White House tradition. Everybody always does this. Whatever. It was made up for the show, right? Because it's a fictional show.
Yeah.
It was made up. And I read somewhere that when Obama was reelected in 2012, his motherfucking staffers attempted to do this. Or a bunch of them, like, were like, oh yeah, we should do that. And they were like, it's not a thing. It's not a real thing. All the pod Johns were like taken in by this, like, swindled by this program into thinking this is how, like, the world works. And, like, it's almost responsible for, this is not a political show.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get into it. People know how I feel about politics generally.
Yeah. But, like, yeah.
It's so responsible directly.
Yeah.
Like, it's such an evil object. So this is the third season is here.
So this is the third season. And it's such an interesting thing because it's such a response to the Gore presidency that never happened.
Yes.
They kind of wished liberals wished for at the time. And it fed them. It gestated the young staffers and campaign volunteers and people who then eventually rose to actually be in congressional and Senate and presidential offices to think that this is how politics worked. That they're all, everyone's, you know, earnestly trying to do the right thing.
Yeah. Like, you can convince people. It's not about, like, gaining and wielding power to do the mm-hmm. things you want to do. It's about, I don't know, like,
magic bipartisanship.
Magic bipartisan, like, convincing your Republican friends to, like, go along for the ride.
Or it's scolding, like, them. I remember a scene where he scolds, like, a conservative Christian with Bible quotes as though, like, they're, like, almost like they're being beaten, like, in a fighting game by every hit of hypocrisy, as though that's a thing.
Holy moly.
This episode was special because they did a written post 9/11 episode. The show had such a hopeful view.
Yeah.
That I have to think it, to some degree, like, being number three most popular show at the time, also influenced the bipartisanship that sprung up after 9/11.
Yeah, the very good bipartisanship.
The very, very
good
bipartisanship.
Which in and of itself is a good thing with no problems.
Always.
That's right.
So I'm not seeing anything about it on the actual Wikipedia.
Okay, so you are trying to find the episode Isaac and Ishmael, a non-canonical episode.
There we go.
Which
okay.
aired on October 3rd, 2001.
Okay.
So I'm straight up just on the Wikipedia here, not to do, like, true,
like,
crime podcasts. I read Wikipedia to you.
This isn't making sense. Okay.
Yeah. Prior to the episode, the show's actors directly address the audience. They state that the episode is a play outside the show's normal continuity and provide donation hotlines for victims of the September 11th attacks. The White House is placed into lockdown. after a staffer, Rakim Ali, is found to share a name with the alias of a suspected terrorist. Oh my God. A bunch
okay,
of high
schoolers.
Like, oh my God. It's the same. A bunch of high schoolers are stuck in the cafeteria trapped in the White House, which is, of course, the plot of the film White House Down.
There we go. Time is a flat circle. So yeah. We have, because I was like, this, they can't have done something in response or after September 11th without
little,
it being terrorism related. So
they
yeah.
did, actually. And it was just, they
of
shot
course.
It afterwards. They shot it really quickly.
But threw it on there before the actual premiere
threw
and
it
non-canonically.
On there. It is season 3, episode 0. And wow. It seems to be a parable about Islamophobia, which is fine.
And because they have a succession of characters takes the role of teacher or lecturer in the cafeteria scene, giving long explanations of the nature of terrorism and the way the United States should respond. This is his brain on the script page of how he thinks it all works.
He's going newsroom mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. The show where he like takes news events from the previous year and says, this is how the media should have covered it. And it would have fixed everything. Idiotic. An idiotic man who should be in jail for what he's done.
And the liberal quote unquote administration in the episode endorses phone tapping and increased intelligence funding.
That's an awesome thing to say while the Patriot Act is like rocketing through Congress.
Yeah, implicitly supporting it as
well. Oh my God, that's awesome! Thank you, Aaron.
There we go.
Cool.
But you know what? In the news.
Take me to the news.
We'll take you to this, something you won't hate as much. I think it's going to be hard. Microsoft, we had the antitrust case, was just ongoing. I thought that was interesting. The way it was getting settled. It was not getting like, they weren't getting broken up. Oh, no.
No.
We don't use antitrust law to do that anymore.
No.
But I thought that was notable.
It's nothing like the film antitrust.
Yeah.
From the same year.
Reagan, at this time, became the oldest living president at age 90.
Wow. He must die shortly after, right?
I thought it was 2004. I thought it was during
that
re-election.
Yeah, he died around then.
Because they made it into a campaign stop, kind of. Stop the news.
Oy.
But I don't know if he knew when, what time it was.
Yeah, I don't think he knew what was going on. I don't think Ron Reagan knew about 9/11.
No.
I don't think Ron Reagan was watching The West Wing.
No.
Do you think Ron Reagan was watching Star Trek Enterprise?
I mean, would they have left the UPN on is the question. What TV channel do they leave on?
I need to know whether or not Ronald Reagan watched any Star Trek Enterprise. That's my main question about Ronald Reagan.
I did
kind of
forget that he was alive until I saw this headline and then was like, well, Jimmy Carter fucked that record up.
Yeah, dude. Jimmy Carter will never die.
Nope.
It's the official position of the podcast is that Jimmy Carter will live forever. Yeah, I got nothing to add. He's gonna keep going.
Yeah, no, I had nothing else to say.
He'll never die.
He will never die. There's
he'll
nothing
never
else.
Die. Yeah.
Okay. Also, in political news, closer to our hearts, the Democratic runoff of they were doing the New York mayor's race right mm-hmm. in the night during all this stuff.
Yeah.
Mark Green won the Democratic primary and he's gonna go on to lose to Mike Bloomberg.
Yes, he will. Good old, and then Mike Bloomberg's terrible reign begins.
Yes.
A fun thing to remember is that September 11th was supposed to be the mayoral primaries.
Oh, literally that day.
Or no, it was supposed to be it was the mayoral primaries, I think.
Because I was thinking this seemed a little late considering then November was the actual real deal.
Yeah. So they pushed it, obviously.
Yeah. And this was, okay, this was another thing that I thought was interesting. This headline, it was about FBI investigates a high school kid's prediction that the World Trade Center would soon disappear. This was in the New York Post. Had had confirmation from the FBI, so it was like a real story. But apparently this kid, you know, the unfortunate thing is the heavily implied racism around it was that he was an recent immigrant. But apparently a week beforehand pointed at the Twin Towers and said, in a week they'll be gone, or something to that effect. And I just bring this up because I do remember this idea of like rumors.
Oh, yeah.
Flying around. Oh, I dreamed about this last week. Or is like that kind of stuff was just in the miasma.
Real
of,
messianic sort of time.
School kids. The fact that this was high school kids made me think about that.
Yeah. Like it was very like, oh, you'd get a chain email. that was like, did you know that all Jews got an email in the morning of September 11th saying that they don't have to go to, that they shouldn't go to work? Like, this is a real thing that was going around. It was like very, yeah, there was a real sort of, just absolute panic and like this weird search for meaning, I think, that was just born of this, massive confusion around this thing happening after, you know, at post history had ended, right? Like we were living in like this beautiful time where there's never going to be any big problems ever again. And this catastrophic thing happened and everybody just lost their fucking minds. And one of the ways was, yeah, like teen Nostradamus gets arrested by the FBI.
Yeah, I have to think that this poor kid was probably investigated, like interviewed, but the, like literally the quotes in the article is like, yeah, we looked into it and like no comment.
Yeah. We looked into it episode. And then we looked over at the one guy in the FBI that knows whether or not psychics are real, and he was shaking his head no again, and we said, oh, okay, never mind. We dropped it.
And then, okay, last one, because I just thought there was this big headline, it was in all caps also in the New York Post, that just said, passage of time simply cannot ease the pain. And it was written by Rod Dreher. And
oh, big Rod.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, of course, this was just about the fact that, you know, it still hurt a month later. But there's something about seeing that headline, and it's just like, should we just run that every once in a while, you know, just so people know they're not, you know, not alone out there. I don't want his him to write it ever again.
No.
But I think that's just like a nice thing to let people understand that stuff hurts and it will for a long time, but you just got to find a way to go to keep going.
I think in this instance, Rod Dreher is correct.
Wow.
The time does not heal all wounds.
I didn't actually read the like. I just scanned it over real quick, but yeah, I imagine that's what it's about.
I mean, I normally go to his columns for sort of like emotional grounding and just like advice for my life in everyday situations.
But you know what would bring me some real sucker is what happened on this last episode of Enterprise.
Oh boy. Okay. So this episode was sort of a clunker, in my opinion. So you raised the point that it should maybe be, it maybe should have been the second episode, like post pilot. And it certainly seems like that. Like the whole bit of the episode is that they find a planet that looks a lot like Earth. And they go there and they get stuck, and some people from the Enterprise get stuck there, but it's like the first ever Starfleet away mission.
Yeah.
Right? Like that is the real thing of it.
And importantly, they go somewhere.
Yes.
Like they leave the ship. They're not bored.
Yes. Something happens. They go to a planet. They go to like an M-class planet or whatever. But like the contents of the, like we can like run through the plot actually pretty quickly, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, so like they see the planet, everyone on the ship is like, let's go. They introduce this one character, what's her name? Cutler, I think, is the name of the woman.
And Novakovic.
And Novakovic.
Novakovic.
And they're like, we're going to go down to the, and they're like, not officers.
Yeah.
And it felt a little bit at the top of the episode that they were trying to do a TNG Lower Decks-ass thing, that one very famous episode of Enterprise where it's all about non-officers on the ship. The name of the show Lower Decks is taken from the name of this TNG episode. But it's also like, crucially, that TNG episode was in season 7 of TNG. This is episode 4, and they're like, now let's see who else is on the ship. We're done with it. Like,
yeah, that also the implication that like, oh, we got some red shirts, like they're here to die. And I guess, you know, spoiler if you're not watching along, but everyone lives.
Yeah. I think that's the fake out, right? Is you think he's going to die?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so they find this planet that's like an M-class planet.
Minchara. That's what it means.
Minchara. Yeah. There's like Easter egg. It means Minchara. And it's like, that doesn't tell me anything.
Who cares?
Like, you just, it's like, if you heard it the whole time, it was the M-class planet, and they said, yeah, it stands for Miggledy Piggledy. And it's like, who? It doesn't mean. You didn't assign meaning to it. I always just thought M was like the letter of the alphabet, which makes more sense.
I thought it was cataloging
the planets by letter, which makes sense. It's a lot of kinds of planet. Anyways.
Yeah.
Whatever. They go down to the planet. Archer brings his fucking dog. It's just, just like... And the whole time, everyone's like, shouldn't there be some sort of like, oh, I don't know, a protocol or like a directive for like getting on the planet? Like, it should be like the prime directive.
Should we maybe...
The first protocol. They're like, no, I'm going to bring my dog and let him run around the woods alone.
It tries to establish T'Pol as being like very cold and distant and by the book about like, we take a week with the probes, you know, before anyone steps foot. And it's like, screw that. We're going camping.
Yeah. And also before this... Cutler is an entomologist, and you see her like trying to eat Vulcan food to like impress T'Pol, and T'Pol is like, you can't make small talk with me.
Yeah,
that's not how I am a Vulcan.
They were gonna go somewhere more with that. Like, she just keeps trying to impress.
No, they drop it.
T'Pol. And I was like, oh, but that's if this was a more charming show than it is. Yeah, they would do something like that.
A show that understood how like A, B, and C plots work.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Oh, but in that first scene, I did want to point out that when they land on there, they're in a park. It's actually Griffith Park in L.A.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, this just looks like L.A. It looks like the most like L.A. anywhere has ever looked.
And they're wearing baseball caps in X01. You can buy them today.
I was looking at those caps and I was thinking really hard about it. I can't buy any more hats at the moment.
It's fair enough.
I bought a ball cap at the aforementioned Cats Colon the Jellicle Ball the other day.
That's amazing.
My hat budget is blown.
But the hats, them all wearing hats, really reminded me of our theoretical guy who's watching this show from his truck. That audience member is like, these are still captains who will wear a ball cap.
Yeah, like they're like submarine captains wearing like mission.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like Trucker John, the big Star Trek fan. Who's sitting in like, what's that? There's that town that's like the exact geographical center of America in Kansas. But he like lives. He lives there. He's watching the show in one of those little handheld TVs you used to get with the big arch antenna, and he's watching it in his truck between shifts at the machine gun factory. Finally understanding Star Trek because they're wearing hats.
They're speaking to him.
They're wearing boiler suits. They're wearing hats.
They're going camping.
They're going camping. And then immediately everyone gets like goes insane like Kramer's ergot style on the planet. Anyway, it's like a team stays behind. It's like Tucker, T'Pol,
Travis.
And then Novakovich and Cutler stay behind, and this horrible storm drives them into a cave that they can't be like transported out. They have to wait it out until the morning.
It's a fun little series of errors where at first everything, you know, seems fine, maybe too perfect, and then they find a bug in one of their sleeping bags. And I don't know if I just watched it recently, but that bug looked like the mind control bug from TNG.
It very much did.
I don't know if that was a reference that they really cheekily put in there, because it's not a thing. They just like are scared and then quickly run away and it's never a thing again.
Yeah.
But yeah, first there's a bug and they're all like freaking out, and then the storm picks up. So there's just like, gotta get out of here. Go to the cave.
Yeah. And then once they're in the cave, Novakovich goes nuts, thinking that he's like seeing like creatures in the rocks. Mm-hmm. Right. And he loses his mind and tries to run out into the storm. And during the storm, I think Archer was like, everybody's got to get back on the ship. He can't land the shuttle. And Novakovich like won't get in the ship.
Why is the captain piloting a shuttle?
Because the pilot is in the cave.
Because the one other pilot, their secondary co-pilot, their extra pilot, in case the pilot's got a fever, a cold.
Everybody's in the cave. Send all your pilots in the cave. This is like, I feel like they just would constantly fail. I mean, why does the captain ever go on an away mission?
There's a bit more of the, like, I don't know, harkens back to the explorer idea, especially with Picard. It felt like almost more sense of, like, he literally wants to be an archaeologist, so he almost, like, argued himself onto those away. I think that was a little bit of a dynamic with him and...
Yes.
What's his bearded, what's his face? How am I forgetting?
Frakes.
Frakes.
Riker.
Riker. That was a little bit their dynamic. Here, there's not... I mean, there's the dynamic with T'Pol, I guess, that, like, you should be cautious, and he's like, fuck that, I'm going camping. Yeah. But he doesn't, actually. He doesn't stay. It would have made a lot more sense, honestly, and I saw some critical reception of this, like, why don't we get him staying? Why don't we get to see him kind of, like, going nuts and trying to hold it together, show his fears and whatever.
I simply don't know.
But instead, he's a shitty pilot.
Yeah, he, like, can't get everybody in, so he uses the experimental transporter on Novakovich to get him back to the ship because he's outside the cave, which makes sense.
Yeah.
And then they're back in the cave, and Tucker is like, hey, T'Pol, you see these aliens? And she's like, no, I've not gone insane. I don't see them. And then it's like, I think there's like a very sort of like, you know, there's a classic sort of sci-fi plot line that is like the monsters have come to Maple Street or who goes there or the thing or any of these things. Mm-hmm. Oh, we don't know who's real and who's like, we suddenly don't trust each other. We're all pointing guns at each other. We're trying to figure out whatever. And this episode botches it so bad.
It's, yeah.
Because it's just Tucker going insane and T'Pol is like, I'm actually fine.
It's, yeah, okay. It's Novakovich going insane and running away. So uh-huh. Not like a real dramatic plot no. for any direction. And then, yeah, otherwise we just have Tucker getting crazy, but we have T'Pol just kind of getting a little irritable over yeah. the episode. Like, it's affecting everyone. But yeah, she's just getting a little pissy about it, about how he's waving a gun at her eventually. But yeah, everyone's starting to sort of suspect T'Pol.
Yeah. And it's like, and everybody just sort of drops out besides Tucker.
Yeah, pretty much.
At some point, and it's just Tucker and T'Pol like pointing guns at each other for a long time. And meanwhile, back on the ship, Novakovich is like dying. Mm-hmm. And Phlox is just like staring at his body on the hospital bed like, I don't know, man. You got any ideas? Like, it's very... he's like, and he keeps being like, hey, have you heard of this? And he's like, names a new compound. He's like, I tried this.
Tropolosylene. Fuck it.
He loves... whatever. They love to make up molecules on this show.
At first, he's like, no problem. He's gonna survive. And then the next scene, he's like, I'm sorry. I fucked up.
He's gonna die.
I'm so sorry.
And they're like, okay, so we actually can't leave them overnight. Because this like local pollen that drove Novakovich insane is also killing him. So like we got to get everybody off.
So yeah. So one, you got to go. We can't pick you up. I'm a shitty pilot. Sorry. Oops. We think it's pollen. So go deeper into the cave.
That's right.
And it may also be killing you because it's a toxin.
That's right.
And so from there, it's trying to be the thing to kind of like prod this into something more thrilling.
Yeah, but it's just like, it's like there's like this, they never, it never feels like any urgency. And they're just like, oh, we synthesized an antidote and we're gonna beam it in a suitcase mm-hmm. to the mouth of the cave. And then we just have to tell T'Pol and Vulcan to shoot Tucker with a gun.
So yeah, that ultimately beams like how they solve this. It's like
they solve it by shooting him,
just stunning him. Hopefully
they just get him to Archer just convinces Tucker to lower his gun for 2 seconds. And T'Pol just fucking blasts him with the stun
this
ray.
This episode hinged on Tucker's gullibility.
Yeah.
That was the important character development.
But I love... But also, like, the entire thing was, like, there was no, like, clever anything. It was just like, Tucker, hey, man, can you lower your gun for, like... 1 second? And then, like, Hoshi, like, in Vulcan yells, shoot him! Like...
Yeah. So, thinking to what you were saying about how this was a pretty classic sort of plot, it's even a pretty classic Star Trek thing is that it's the cave episode where it's like people yeah. kind of like going nuts in a cave for whatever reason, being stuck there.
They do love to, for a show about space, they really do love to go into caves.
And it's a thing, again, you know, speaking of Lower Decks again, I didn't think about it until they literally made an episode called Cave Episode.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, that is a thing they do all the freaking time. The thing here though is, with this plot, you can kind of decide how much do you let the audience know what's happening is real or fake.
Yeah,
and it felt like they had no idea what they wanted to do there because I feel like Novakovich's hallucination, he's seeing like other Star Trek people out there. Like, I don't know if that's yeah. just who they had on hand to film. They didn't care about doing some weirder special effect. But out in the stormy underbrush, he sees human Star Trek fleet officers. Like,
you know, that's right. Yeah. Sorry.
I don't know. To me, it's pretty clearly what they are. And then later inside the cave, you have like stuff that kind of looks cloaked or liquidy. It's maybe harkening back to the one aliens we've seen recently in the first in the premiere. So you're like, gooey stuff. Maybe this is like, is it trying to trick the audience that there's actually something going on or not? And it just like doesn't care. It's like, we don't care if you think they're real or not.
Like at no point are they like it's an interesting episode if they're trying to convince both of them to calm down.
Yeah.
But to T'Pol is just like, if it was Archer and Tucker down there, it's interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
And T'Pol is on the ship trying to convince them to whatever. I mean, like, not to make every episode of this show like, we fix the episode.
But it's like astonishing how it clearly some small things would have fixed the dynamics. Like, I can't see how it could have been worse if you just did that one.
Yeah, I'm developing a sort of theory around how this show was written, in which that maybe I think it was just the first draft every time that we're seeing.
I mean, from what I understand, again, they got that direction from our Brandon Braga,
yeah,
but not very clearly or well construed. The writers give their best shot at making a screenplay, a teleplay, and then I think that gets handed back up the chain and garbled again. And it's definitely not an effective way to write something.
No, I mean, yeah, like, well, you know, they hand the script into Braga. And then he has to fly to Kansas and show the script to Trucker John. And if he doesn't understand it, you know, because he's stupid, then they've got to change it up, and they got to make it, you know, like, he's confused. Like, are the monsters real? They're like, no, you should know the whole time.
You should know. Yeah. Like that, like by having him consistent between everyone's hallucination, or T'Pol is affected dramatically differently, and then you have to be convinced in a different way,
right? And the rest of the characters are also just like asleep.
Yeah. Okay. Again, we had these two characters. Is something going to happen to them? They slept. Yeah. They're sleepy.
There's like Travis is just like asleep, and it's like if they're all going crazy and it's one person with all these crazy people. Yeah.
Okay. There is something I did miss. You reminded me with Travis. I think it's Tucker refers to him as a boomer. And
does
I think
he?
It's because of that's like who they call people who grow up in a warp capable spaceship.
Okay.
Because it's in the conversation where he's like, I can't grow. I something about being on a place where I don't hear the thrum of a warp core. It just doesn't feel right to me.
Oh, they get to the planet and Tucker's like, when was the last time you saw the sky?
Yeah, yeah. And Tucker Trip is just like, oh, you boomers. And it's like, whoa, that sounds so different to me.
Sure, that's funny.
Yeah, I don't know how much that comes up, but they're trying to do some like world building, but they just never seem to care.
Yeah, like, and they just like they plant all these interesting seeds about, oh, you grew up on a spaceship and you're like the first kind of person to do that, and then they just never really do anything about it or with him.
I don't remember it much being a thing discussed by officers on TNG or the original series.
Nope.
Or Voyager, I'm presuming. I guess you have a little bit more people outside the normal Starfleet in DS9. But here it was like an opportunity to do something that maybe felt different, but not a lot going on yet, like most of the show.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
I'm pining. I double checked. Episode 7 is when we get Shran. It'll be better soon.
Sound the Shran countdown.
The Shran countdown.
The Shran countdown, and then we're going to go Shran crazy. Shran is coming. Shran is coming.
Shran is coming.
I think that's where we're going to leave people this week.
We are.
Shran incoming.
We're going to hype Shran so much. I hope the first episode Shran's in like is
no Shran comes in hot, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I do remember the vague plot of it, so I think it's a pretty good one, because it's there's a whole aspect to Shran and why he's there that's interesting, like plot wise outside of him, and they actually run a lot with that plot line. It's one of the few things I like about Enterprise. Hopefully that'll keep people listening for another 3 episodes. God.
Yeah, man, we'll get there together as a family.
Yeah, but this has been Temporal Culture War. We'll do this every 2 weeks. May or may not be a Patreon or something yet. Look into that. But thank you for listening. I'm Clayton Ashley,
and I'm Maddie Lipchansky.
Bye now.
Punch it. What does he say?
Let's go.
Let's go.
How could you forget?
Sorry.